afternoon, everybody. We certainly have seen a diminution of attendance since we switched to this afternoon time. It's a little concerning because we're not reaching as many people. I'll have to attend to that. So this afternoon, we've been all month, or even a little bit longer than the last month, we've been talking about the metta practice, loving kindness practice. And today I'd like to zero in on the connection between the Sangha jewel and loving kindness practice, because it's kind of one and the same in many ways. So we've been reminding ourselves of the phrases that we say to ourselves as we encounter difficulty. May I be free from fear. May I have physical comfort or relief. May I have mental well-being. May I be at ease. So that's always the first way that we direct metta, is to ourself. Because we, too, are part of the Sangha. The Sangha emanates from us, right? But then we offer these phrases to the other, whether that's a person who we love, we appreciate, we just know a little bit, or we have difficulty with. We impartially offer metta to everyone. Just as we carefully we respond with care to animals, we respond, we take care of the things in our life that serve us. So metta goes beyond just to sentient beings. And now we're going to be putting together a Zen center. And so we're going to have the things that we care for together also in common. As we've been practicing with metta, we've been meeting on Tuesday evenings during our Dharma discussion. We've been talking about all the specific challenges to maintaining an open heart and extending kindness to ourselves and others, and especially when we get caught up in fear or judgment. This is where metta is our fondest tool, most helpful tool. Fear and judgment are states of mind that really put the blocks to our heart energies and our ability to love and to be patient, to be kind, and also to free ourselves from our most limited and self-centered views. When we are in a state of discomfort, pain, fear, we really congeal around the small self. We go into brainstem, fight or flight, and can lose track of our interconnection. So Tore Zenji, in the vow, Tore Zenji's Bodhisattva vow, says, all beings are the marvelous manifestations of the Tathagata's truth. The Tathagata is the Buddha, right? The Buddha's truth. And because of this, our virtuous ancestors extended loving care to even such beings as birds and beasts. If this is so, with those most unlike us, how much more should we be kind and merciful towards human beings, even those who are foolish and different? That's a wonderful vow to be found on page 54 of our chant books, if you ever want to take a look. So now we're pulling into a time when our Sangha, the Sangha jewel, is becoming even more connected through the work of building and maintaining an actual Zen center. We've been a Zen center for 26 years, but now we're going to have a building. So as a Dharma community, we're leaving behind the Eden of idealized practice and coming together, the rubber meets the road, and we really begin to discover the true meaning of the liberation of the Buddha way. We find out about this as we work together more closely and we live together more closely. It's a much more demanding practice. So many of us come and have an idealized view because we can do this very easy, quiet practice together for a little while, and then we go home to our usual lives. But when we have a center, it will add way more dimension to the practice. And the Buddha way is real only as it affects how we live our lives. And many of you have been practicing a long time and already are very aware of the changes that it brings about as we wake up. This moment is the only moment where our lives are expressed. And because our lives become more entwined, as we pull weeds together, as we did yesterday, we did a whole big garden project, cleared a lot of stuff from the new place in preparation for the construction.
Human weed whackers.
As we schedule work days, as we pay our dues as promised, as we clean the bathrooms, make sure there's toilet paper, order incense, and welcome newcomers. When I was kind of going through this earlier, after I wrote it, I said, and welcoming cucumbers. Cucumbers and newcomers. We are all responsible for maintaining every aspect of a center that is welcoming and that is transforming, that really, really encourages and inspires all of us to come into our own best form. Best form, best meaning, the one that brings the most happiness to ourselves and to others. So we all have our fantasies and opinions about how things should be done. And we sort through these various opinions for the best way forward together. We do this in the practice committee, we do it in the board meeting, we do it any old time we get together to figure anything out. We have different opinions, and we need to somehow reckon with how we bring those into alignment. We bring ourselves into alignment. And as we do this, we discover our own edgelessness, as well as our own limitations. We discover and we see blatantly our own reactivity and how it affects us and each other. We now have the opportunity to cultivate how we offer our opinion, the manner in which we conduct disagreement, without harsh judgment and impatience. And this is where metta is really useful and is a very, very juicy tool. When our opinions unsettle our hearts and form tension in our body and mind, metta is useful. So do you notice that when you have an opinion, immediately there's a corresponding tension in the body? Please notice that next time there's an opinion. So it's really terrific to have the opportunity to practice with others. This is why we call this the Sangha Jewel, because it really brings life to the practice. It brings life to our life. So that we practice together in the community, so that when we're in non-practice communities, our families, our workplaces, our neighborhoods, and we function in communities where nobody's ever heard about Zen and nobody cares about Zen. So I heard somebody walking by as I was coming here today, and they said, Zen meditation, what's that? you know, it's for me, it's hard to believe that no everybody doesn't know what Zen meditation is. But it reminds me, no, it's a very rarefied kind of a practice. And a lot of people don't care about it. Nonetheless, people don't have to care about it in order to experience being with us who cultivate this way of wisdom and kindness and skill and flexibility. We bring whatever we become more familiar with and skillful with, we bring that to all aspects of our life. In Sangha, everything we do and whatever we decide, we need to take a broad view. So we decide something. How will this be with newcomers? So actually, this pertains to that falling off of people coming to this later time, you know. We want to take a broad view about that. How will this continue to nourish whatever we decide? How does it nourish long-time practitioners as well as newcomers? How will whatever we decide help folks see clearly? How will whatever we do create confusion, reinforce the judging mind, or clarify things and free us from judgments? We're always taking, when we're taking a broader view, we are taking what we are coming to recognize as me mind. We all have it. The inflexible energies that we all get caught up in. And we're willing to see that and willing to challenge it and say, wait a minute, in this context, there are more things that are important to take into account than my own preferences. This is always the case in Zen centers, and it's one of the things that as we move into elder status or become more in the Zen way, we get more, it becomes more and more automatic to think that way. How does what I do affect how the community will function? This me, you know, I thought, as I was thinking about this talk, I remembered that at the Maui Zendo, where I practiced early on in my Zen career, there are no assigned seats. Nobody has their own bench, their own chair, their own place in the Zendo. Every time we come in, we start fresh. And that is really a very potent thing to do. That's not what we do, but it's something we can begin to think about doing. It's a tendency we all have to settle into some comfortable nest. Especially with our practice, we get very comfortable in a little nest that we know. I like this. Oh, this allows me to be more comfortable. Forgetting that the liberation that the Buddha is offering, the liberation is to end suffering, which really comes about from releasing our hold, not in taking hold of something else. Releasing our hold, getting more at ease with non-opposition to conditions that don't suit us. Things that block our preferences, block our flow, catch us by surprise, are unexpected. So as we practice, we're practicing being able to relax and be open to the way things actually are this time, this place. So there's a roominess in liberation, a roominess that characterizes liberation, a roominess which comes about when we're willing to have our agendas blown, because we've noticed that actually mostly they are. It's obvious when you look at it. It's like, how many days turn out to be the way you think they're going to be? Very few. Very few things result in what we think they're going to result in. And so when we do that, we are free to be amused by our own foolishness and our own holding on, as opposed to self-righteous, defensive, resentful, right? Which tends also to happen when things don't go our own way. But to be amused as people of the way, as people who practice, when we get caught in our own narrowness, it's a wonderful metta practice to just chuckle when it's no longer possible to hold on, when we've gotten caught, when our fortunes change, our bodies age, or whenever our ideas are unwelcome in a group, or our expectations are disappointed. This happens all the time in our lives, and it happens in the Sangha. The Sangha is no different from any group. We are as varied here as apples and oranges. And we should expect it. The Sangha is a refuge only to the extent that we're willing to practice together all of the experiences that we have and open ourselves to the Buddha way, which is no fixed way. So the teachings, the formal teachings and formal practice, are not to give us something we don't have, but they point out and confirm that which is as it is. That's what practice does. That's what a practice center does. It points out to us what is. Not to give us something that we don't have. And by illustration, how many times have you heard a Dharma talk that tells you something that you didn't actually realize yourself? You know, usually my experience has always been the talks that I particularly love is the ones that really confirm what I have noticed from my own experience, right? Mm-hmm. In the most essential way. But we choose to notice some things, and we choose to not be aware of other things. And that's where our habits come in. We notice some things, and we don't notice most everything else. And that's just the way it is, you know. I mean, mostly things are not noticed. So we often forget about all this and think that practice will change samsara. We'll be making conditions better so that we can be happy. But good luck with that. Practice does not change samsara. Samsara, the world of the aspect of this world that is about clinging and greed, anger and delusion. So it doesn't change samsara, but we do become more attuned, more open. And we can become more skillful in relation to conditions, which can have effect sometimes. Things are less difficult when you practice regularly. Not because conditions are so different, but because you're so different. You go forward with less resistance to the way things turn out. So mostly what we have to deal with is whatever comes our way. Samsara as defined as the world of greed, clinging, and separation. The nature of this is suffering that comes when we are living from those states of mind. When I'm in a state of having to have something for me, or hold on to something, or push something away, I am really following the way of samsara. And we all fall into that. But as we refine and come to really appreciate the Buddha way of openness, we can move more freely and be released from suffering and release suffering. So the weather, our health, our work demands, our financial picture are all subject to so many other factors beside our own preferences and the effects of our own choices. All kinds of things are always changing, not because we individually do anything different. So when we practice, we live awake, while also at the same time living a life in the dream of the world of fame and gain and picking and choosing. The relative and the absolute unfold always identically. So this is why metta practice in Sangha is so precious. It helps us soften our grip and release our hearts into the enormous expanse of love and non-separation that is truly true. Where nothing is missing, nothing is left out. And even in difficult circumstances that don't please us or suit us, we can bring to mind, may I be free from fear. May you be free from fear. May you have physical comfort or relief. May you have mental well-being. May you be at ease. Now think of that, you know, when somebody's really uptight and they're coming at you with something, to be able to, in addition to your own defensive energies, be able to know, be able to reach to, may you and may I be at ease. Opens up the possibilities of the outcome of this particular run-in being a little bit different. Being kind and merciful is what we're about in our metta practice. And it is especially important and helpful for all of us to do this together in Sangha. Loving kindness without exceptions. We do not exclude ourselves from our loving heart, and we do not exclude others either. We include those we like and are comfortable with, and we include those we don't like and are uncomfortable around in our metta practice. So that's not saying we don't have our experience of discomfort, but we practice with it. Tori Zenji, again, though they become our sworn enemies, reviling and persecuting us, we should regard them as bodhisattva manifestations who, in their great compassion, are employing skillful means to help emancipate us from our twisted karma that we have produced over countless kalpas through our biased and self-centered views. I love that. How often can you, when somebody's really giving you a hard time, say, oh, what a compassionate bodhisattva to be helping me with my self-centered views. So, in their great compassion, when I bring that phrase to mind, when I'm irked by somebody else, I can immediately chuckle. When I remember, oh, this is the kindness of a bodhisattva, it immediately allows me to chuckle at myself. Very helpful. And to relieve the bodily clutching that accompanies a critical thought. So it opens up awareness. During our meditation, the comments that I made were all about awareness, not following thoughts, but opening awareness. So when I can look more directly into my own reactivity, and which allows me to see the situation more broadly and to respond with more skill, to respond from a broader view rather than react from my own self-centered view. So my vow as a teacher is to use every one of my own reactions, my own reactivity, to inform me about the character work that is mine to do. That guides me to offer a response that may help any of you to also notice your own opportunities to open beyond opinion and judgmentalness. This is what we do in Sangha. We help each other remember to do our own work. And this actually brings us immediately back to the precepts. You know, that the precept that says, rather than putting somebody else down, we check out that same thing that bothers us about them. How do I do that? That's what we do in Sangha. We really, really look into our own narrowness and the ways that we do that, rather than pointing a finger at someone else. This helps us not only become more aware of our own behavior, but it also helps us understand more where other people are coming from. The idea is not to form a judgment around it, a put down, but to say, oh, look at that. This is a kind of suffering here. So to see our own experience, we can see into it and see how we create separation and harm or confusion. That's what we're doing in practice. That's what we do in Sangha together. That's how we help each other. So, metta practice is a precious requirement for life in the Sangha jewel. We have named ourselves the Sangha Jewel Zen Center. We've really taken on a strong vow so that we can all feel when we come, yes, this is a jewel, rather than, what are we talking about, Sangha Jewel? So Tori Zenji again. May we extend this mind through the universe, this mind of compassion, of understanding, of openness, so that we and all sentient beings may equally bring to fruition the seeds of wisdom. This is our vow. This is our work as a Sangha jewel.
Please turn to page 5 of your chant book, located under the front corner of your cushion.